Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hi, my name is Yu Kwan, and I'm the head of purchase experiences at Facebook, working on shops and commerce. So for today, I'm going to tell you a little bit about some of these things that I learned as I worked on different companies. And I think I've been very fortunate in my career where I've been able to work on companies going through all different stages of its growth. From the very early stages of co-founding a company, building a team, raising funding, getting product market fit with my own company, to several growth stage companies like Zenplus and Code Academy, where we were really able to 2x, 4x our users and revenue and so forth, taking it to the next level. And then, of course, at larger scaled companies like Google, Microsoft, and now Facebook, working on products that affected billions of people. And what I found is that while the fundamentals never change about being a product manager throughout these different stages, there are different lenses and different emphasis that you might want to put on some of these different things, some of these nuanced aspects that can help you succeed a little bit more. And this is what I want to talk a little bit about. Roughly speaking, I'm going to bucket the stages into three buckets. The 0 to 1, super early garage stage, pre-market fit, seed stage, series A, to as you're starting to grow and scale a lot, having that foundation, trying to take that to the next level in terms of rapid growth stage, usually after a few rounds of funding. And then, of course, the last stage where you are at a pretty established scaled company. And then, of course, again, still trying to take it to the next level. And I'm going to speak to this really from two perspectives, in terms of some of the things that I think hopefully will be helpful for you to find success for your product and your team, but then as well as for yourself personally as well, career-wise. So let's get into our first stage, 0 to 1. One of my favorites, very dear to my heart. I was pretty lucky when I was building my own startup that we had a chance to go through Y Combinator. And I remember going through YC, one of the most common questions that almost people ask every week is that we asked Paul Graham, the founder, was like, "Hey, Paul, like, how do we know that we're doing well in YC?" And you always say like, "Hey, it's very, very simple. There are two things that you need to do. And if you know, if you're doing either one of those two things, you're doing great." Says you should either be talking to your users or you should be writing code or building product. Eventually, after many years, I think he let us go to the gym every once in a while too. But you know, but I think that the point still stands that I think talking to your users is always one of the most important things that you could be doing, which we all know. I think it's one of the PM basics. Some of the nuances that I want to share in this journey that I think have been able to help me hone over time is when I first started to talk to users, to interview them, to understand and do product discovery, I often fallen into the trap of focusing on my product and my ideas too much and what it could do for people. And hopefully I think all of you will be more sophisticated than that. But what helped me kind of get out of that trap eventually was to stop thinking about my product and try to take my product out of the conversation. And here's a couple ways to sort of illustrate that. As we were talking to our users, I think we found that eventually some of the most illuminating questions were actually not even about the product at all, but in really thinking of ourselves as like anthropologists almost, where when we're trying to understand the problems, and then once they're describing to us like some problem they have, we would actually ask them then, "Hey, okay, it sounds like kind of difficult. Like, how much time do you actually spend working around this?" And a lot of times the answer people will give is very illuminating. Some people would actually, sometimes you find out, oh, actually, even though they say it's a problem, but they say like, "Yeah, it's okay. I just kind of put up with it, or I just kind of use this other thing. You know, it's annoying, but that's okay. It's not too bad." And that's pretty illuminating too, in that this may not be as painful a problem as something else that people have hacked around with workarounds and jumped through many hoops to go through. So really look for these signs where the actions speak much, much louder than words. When people say they really want something or something is really a hair of a problem, that sounds great, but let's see, what do you actually do when you encounter this problem? Another tip I picked up that was really helpful over the years, and kudos a lot to the superhuman guys, I think who really fine-tuned this technique, is if you do have a product in market, try to identify the users who'd be most disappointed if they can't use your product anymore. So there are a bunch of ways you can get around this. You can do this using surveys. You can sometimes even just instrument this within your product. And then following up with these people to identify exactly why they were so disappointed and what they were using your problem product to solve becomes also really, really illuminating. This brings me to my next point, which is kind of related, is that in this very early stage of the company, a lot of the times you are looking for that insight, sort of that aha, the insight of, for example, like Instagram, when they first stumbled upon filters, and then that became one of the things that really differentiated that user experience. And I think a lot of times you will find that the most valuable user insight are not going to be in the data or the numbers, but really from talking to the users and the things they say and the things they do. Just because at this early stage, you don't have enough data to really be able to tell like meaningfully what is happening. And there's a lot of noise and a lot of, and sometimes even ghosts that you might be chasing may not really be there. One really vivid example I really remember is where our first paying users came from for my startup. And the startup I was working on was called everyday.me. And we were a mobile consumer app. Basically, a self-writing journal is a simple way of putting it. It was an intelligent journal, kind of silently runs in the background, captures all the highlights of your life, about your family, your friends, photos, all of these things, and turned that into a really nice story. And initially, we thought our user base was going to be around a little bit around like fitness tracking, people who are really into productivity, like sort of the life hacker folks. Turns out, one of our top users was Sam, who was a mom of two from the Midwest. And we reached out and talked to Sam. It's like, hey, Sam, like, what are you using our app for? A little surprised. And she's like, oh, I'm really into knitting and crocheting. And it turns out that in knitting and crocheting, it is really important to just collect a lot of patterns and ideas. And what she would literally do is just use our app to take pictures of all of these things. Then every month, she would drive down to the local print shop and actually print all of these photos out. Part of the reason was this was also more than 10 years ago. So tech was a little different back then. But then she'll print all these out and then cut them up and then bring them home, paste it into her scrapbook, and then use these to refer to as she knits, because the physical touch was really important. And then we had our moment like, oh my gosh, that's such a terrible process. And you literally do this every month. What if we just automated it for you and we just like have the backend talk to the printing press and generate really beautiful books and a calendar and even things that you could share with your family? And she's like, oh, wow, I love that. That sounds kind of cool. Like, let's try it out. So she became, long story short, I think she became the first of many, a group of loyal users that was eventually able to help us like build up this business to a break even. And so and we would never have stumbled that insight just looking at like mixed panel or the data. So this is kind of pretty correlated to the previous point in terms of talking to users and looking for these insights. And then related to this then is then what are some of the skill sets and characteristics that you want to pay attention to be successful at a stage, whether for yourself or hiring. And the example I think about a lot is like, what is it like to be a great inventor? Somebody like Thomas Edison. If we look at his life, I think a couple of things that really stood out. First is like, he is really good at noticing problems around the world. I think he had thousands of patents that he filed for. And he was also really good at passing up on ideas that didn't work. And he moved on from those like really relatively quickly. He had also 1,000 ideas that never worked, but that's okay. He hit enough of the big ones. So these are some of the really important things. It's really, really be able to trim your ideas quickly and move on to failure quickly. Very important at this stage. Okay, now second stage, growth stage. This part, really exciting in a different way. I think this is usually when you have a product, you have a stable user base, sometimes you're even growing, and maybe you're already in the hockey stick growth and going like crazy, or you're trying to inflect this hockey stick growth. And at this point, a common struggle that I face certainly is that I usually have a much smaller team, or we are part of a much smaller team, and there are demands from everywhere. All different kinds of users, your customer service reps are saying, this part is on fire. If we don't fix it, it's going to be terrible. And your marketing and sales rep are saying, like, if we don't build this, there's no way people know about product. And there's always other people wanting other things. So what do you focus on? Well, one of the things that we found to be really clarifying for us at Code Academy is in figuring out what is it that people are willing to pay for to use in our product. Sounds really cliche, but it really is true. Build something worth paying for and people will come. And so with Code Academy, what we had was Code Academy was an educational tech product where people came onto a website and were learning how to code for free. And because of this, it was wonderful. Like, we had millions of people around the world learning on this product. But that was also very difficult because they had millions of people, everybody from 80-year-old grandmas to 10-year-old kids, like, getting online for the first time. So it was really difficult to figure out who exactly we're building for and how do we optimize it. And so when we dug into the data, and at this stage, you will start to have more data and you do want to start to be a little more data-minded. And what we found was that if we just narrowed it to the subset of people who paid, and then we trace back their history into when they converted from a free user to pay user, it actually ran very counter to our hypothesis at the time, which was that it took a long time for people to get comfortable enough with coding to decide to pay. Our thinking was that coding was very hard, and we heard this from users in interviews a lot, that it took them many months to get comfortable. Well, what actually turned out, again, actions speak louder than words, is when we looked at the data, and we found that, oh, this is so surprising. Basically, the vast majority of people, like 80% of the people who were going to converted within like the first 2 or 4 weeks. That brought so much clarity and focus to our team and a product that it really sort of just blew the door open for our growth. Because now we definitely knew that focusing on the first user experience was really important. That first week experience was really important. We started to have a team to really dedicate to optimize the heck out of that. We built a whole team around a paid pro tier product to really focus on, okay, how do we then once make it enticing enough that people want to upgrade and stay with us? And then also that gave us a good sense of balancing our investments in the free product, knowing that, okay, well, the free product is still important. It's great for the world. We'll keep investing in it. But we also know that most of the benefit, at least from a business perspective, is going to come to us in, again, the first month or so. So that gave us a good sense of that balance. And lastly, I think really importantly, as we dug into this group, we found out that the personas that we were serving suddenly narrowed very, very quickly. And we found out that actually this core group of users who liked our product enough to pay for it and to continue using it were really only a couple. People who are learning to code to switch their jobs, say you're going from a barista and you want to get out of that, become a website freelancer, somebody using to level up in their current career, like you are a financial analyst looking to go from Excel to learn some Python to do data scientist, and a hobbyist who want to use it to build specific projects. So again, this narrowing function became was a great just a lens that really helped us focus everything, our product, our strategy, how I built the team. So think about this as potentially one of the lenses that might help you. The next lesson for companies at this stage, I encourage a lot of you to think about that I found very helpful, at least, is thinking about how do I build people capacity on my team before it starts to grow, before the team grows, the business grows, and so forth. what a lot of times happens is, and I was definitely guilty of this earlier on in my career as well, is I would think that, hey, that's okay. We're going to grow this team organically. I'm going to grow my people, groom their talent, and then we're going to bring them up along with us as the company grows. And yes, there are definitely times for that. But oftentimes, as you're starting to hit hypergrowth, you're going to grow so fast and you're going to encounter challenges that are orders of magnitude harder and more complex than what you've dealt with, that it's often very hard for someone who hasn't done it before to keep up. And this is where you definitely want to hire senior leaders and just senior talent. They may not don't have to always be managers, but really senior, like, say, growth product managers or designers or people like that can really help you pave the ground for getting to that next level of growth. Another example from Code Academy was I was lucky to have built out multiple functions there beyond product and design and data science, biz dev, ops, and so forth. And when we were able to hire a head of design, he came in and took our team of designers from 5 to 12 and really more than like 2x the output of the function with a bunch of specialty functions in research and visual design and ops as well. And then another person came in and ran our entire ops team and was able to more than triple our curriculum production with our ops function and build that team from scratch. So I think some of these examples, I think just to show that it is, as your company grows, I look forward and have these people who are already in place who can help you get to that level of growth. And I will also say that I think the right senior person often is not incompatible with your homegrown talent as well. A lot of times the right senior person will know how to grow in that scope for that team so that they can bring up a lot of the other aspiring leaders with them, and then they'll be able to mentor them, grow them, and, which is really fantastic, I think, for everybody. Okay, so what are the important skill sets and traits to succeed at this stage? Well, obviously, the ability to fly around and, you know, crush cars, shoot laser beams, and all of that, right? Okay, just kidding. Definitely, I think there's a lot of similarities to constructing a team, and it's going to feel a little bit like the Avengers, where there are people going to have their strengths and weaknesses, and then, you know, some people get along, other people don't get along. But the person I actually think is really important for the whole Avengers, who doesn't get talked about a lot, is this guy. So yeah, he doesn't get a lot of screen time, doesn't get a lot of attention, but really without him in the background or, you know, bringing everybody together, mediating conflicts and so forth, like Avengers wouldn't happen. And I think this is some of the most important roles that we play as product managers and product leaders, is that we're this person. Our job is to make everyone else shine, is to bring these really strong personalities together, again, with different agendas and different growth areas and strengths. And how do we bring that together into a team and assemble a team and have them charge in the same direction? I think this is one of the most important skill sets at this stage of company, and really at any stage. All right. So with that, let's see. Now, getting to the scale stage. At scale stage, you are working usually at a company that is like pretty established, probably working on a product that's used by hundreds of millions of people or even billions. And really exciting because the changes you make and your team makes can literally make material changes in people's lives around the world. That said, it's also really difficult because usually it means that you have to get now thousands of people, hundreds, thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people to go in the same direction. And what are some of the things that I learned in doing things like that? So I'll refer to a more recent example where I was part of the team that spearheaded the launch of Facebook Shops, which is Facebook's thinking about how do we leverage all the rich social network and information and relationships that people have on Facebook properties to deliver a differentiated and superior shopping experience. Now, to me, make this effort happen required us to, behind the scenes, it probably easily involved 20, 30 different teams from Instagram to Facebook to Messenger to WhatsApp to payments to platform to data and all of these different teams. And how you would get bring these teams together, for I think there's no silver bullet, I think, to be super honest. But what I found to be really helpful during this process was kind of taking a page from the folks on Capitol Hill and thinking about how they usher a very difficult bill through the floor, for example. A lot of times it is about building that coalition, about working with partners that you may not be used to, about understanding really their agenda and what it is that they care about and how do you work that into yours. It's about identifying stakeholders that don't sit in your org, but may sit multiple orgs away. For example, in shops and commerce, some of my most important stakeholders are many levels removed in sales and sales engineering and customer support and business development and partnerships who work with our platform partners like Shopify and BigCommerce and WooCommerce and so forth. But without all of these folks, and they have very different objectives that they're trying to achieve, whether it's the sales quota they're trying to hit, number of partnerships they're trying to sign. And then really understanding that and then aligning and crafting both the narrative as well as the product roadmap and strategy that will both serve your customers externally. And now these internal folks, which in a way is also your internal customers, can potentially be a pretty powerful tool to help you usher a giant initiative through in a big company. And here's the picture that I love to look at and remind myself a lot of in terms of skill sets to hone at a company of this stage is a lot of times it is really very much about reaching across the aisle, reaching across org lines, functional lines, working with other people that you may not normally have worked with. And really developing, thinking about crafting, what is your agenda? How is it going to be framed and branded so that it can, again, reach across many constituent groups and speak to all these different constituent groups within your company, your very large company, and so that you can get the critical mass needed to bring it through. So I think there's probably like a whole nother talk that we can have on this one, but I think the key here is to really think about, again, identifying your stakeholders, your key constituents, your key messaging, and think about honing that. So with that, I'm going to quickly recap on some of the things I covered today. So in the first stage of a company's growth, the 0 to 1, focus a lot on talking to your users. And especially with a lens where you're looking for qualitative insights before quantitative insights, you know, look at what people do instead of what they say, and look at the words a little more than the numbers. In the rapid growth stage, definitely want to focus on building something that people want to pay for. That can often be a very clarifying lens. And then think about building the senior leadership capacity on your team before your team and business starts to grow. And lastly, in a scale, the mature stage, think of yourself not just as a product leader, but really as a people leader, a coalition leader. Think about how you may have external customers and internal customers within your company, your constituents, your stakeholders, your sponsors, your the people who funded you. Thinking from that lens can often help you figure out how to navigate organizational dynamics and achieve your objectives and make that next level change. So with all of that, I hope that all of you found something useful and hopefully that there was something that you were able to take away. Yeah. And then I definitely hope that you'll enjoy the rest of the event and good luck on you in building a success for your team and your product. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.